Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Thursday afternoon. Coming up later in the program, Elise Glink will be here with a few marketing ideas for you. And later on, as well, I said, Joe Paglioni, who has created this levitating cup. He had a Kickstarter campaign, wildly popular. He raised more money than he needed, I think. And they're going to start shipping out these floating drink glasses sometime next month. We're going to start, though, with Justin Haywald. He's the managing editor of GameSpot.com. Justin, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Yeah, hey, thanks so much for having me on.
So everyone's talking about Apple and their big unveil, but there was another unveil from PlayStation today, right?
Yeah, well, so that came out yesterday. PlayStation, we'd kind of heard rumors about this for a long time, but Sony finally revealed their PlayStation Plus, or their PlayStation Pro console, which is a more powerful version of the current PlayStation 4. And that's coming out in November for $400. But they also revealed a reduced price for the current PlayStation 4 model. It'll be called the PlayStation 4 Slim. It'll be slightly smaller, slimmer, as the name implies. And it'll be $300. And that's coming out just in a couple days on September 15th.
All right, so I don't know too much about gaming. My son has an Xbox, and my prayer was that he wouldn't bring it to college with him. He didn't, but his roommate did. And he says, Dad, no, you know, I need this for internet and for phone service and for, you know, all this other stuff. Tell me about it. And what I'm reading is that these companies are doing that a little bit, right, that they're branching out away from just games but using these consoles for other things as well to sort of move software. Is that the case with Sony?
Yeah, Xbox and Sony have both had a really big push into just being a living room console. It's no longer just a gaming device where all you do is play games. Where you get most of your entertainment these days is through these devices. PlayStation in particular has services like PlayStation View and PlayStation Now. PlayStation View is like a cable service. It lets you cut out cable entirely, and you can get all of these channels and all of the programming that you would normally get through your cable service, and it's just directly on your PlayStation. You have a DVR built in. It's kind of a home entertainment system, and Xbox doesn't have that same kind of functionality, but it does tie into your current cable box and it kind of acts as a DVR device.
I see. And so for PlayStation, that's nice because they're owned by Sony, and Sony develops a lot of video content.
Yeah, there's even original programming. When you go into the PlayStation Store, you can get TV and movies, and not just stuff that you see on Apple stores or all of the other programming devices. You can get original programming that Sony has made specifically for the PlayStation PlayStation channel.
Is it any good, Justin?
It's not my favorite. I mean, to be honest, most of it seems to have fallen pretty flat, but it's something that is an interesting way to get more content. I mean, we're seeing that from Netflix.
Well,
putting a really big investment into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just a sign of things to come, different ways to get new shows. I'm a big fan of original programming on Netflix. Justin Haywald is with us. We're talking about the Sony PlayStation unveil that came earlier this week, and I got a little bit ahead of myself, but tell me about these two units then. If I have a PlayStation at home now, do I need to buy one of the two new ones, or who will be buying these two?
Yeah, it's a interesting proposition for going to this holiday, especially with a console war, you know, we have between PlayStation and Microsoft. Microsoft earlier this year announced a slimmer version of their own console at a reduced price, and this is Sony's direct response to that. So later this month, they have that PlayStation 4 Slim, which is $300, which if you don't have a PlayStation 4 yet, is probably a really good entry point in getting into that. The PlayStation Pro, their more expensive one, is still only $400, which is a pretty nice price, and it's really surprising that it's coming out this year. That's aimed more at people who have a really nice media center. If you've already invested in a 4K TV, if you have a really nice system, this is the console that's going to really show off that system that you have at home, your TV and your home media surround system.
Is this a one-on-one fight, Microsoft and Sony?
It's definitely an ongoing battle. The PlayStation Pro that we're getting this holiday is kind of a response to something Microsoft announced earlier this year, which was the Project Scorpio. So next year, Microsoft is going to introduce its own more powerful console. We don't know too much about it, but they've made a lot of hints that it's going to be a very, very powerful system. But we don't know the price. We don't know exactly when it's coming out. And this is kind of Sony firing that first salvo and saying, well, we have our more powerful console and it's going to be available this Christmas.
I guess if it is the two of them, then who's got a bigger share of the market?
Right now, Sony has the overall bigger share of the market, but Microsoft has been making huge inroads into it, particularly because they have their own slim console that came out last month. And I think last month, Microsoft sold more consoles for the month than Sony did. So Sony needed to have some kind of response to Microsoft potentially catching up to them. And with this reduced price and a more powerful console coming out this year, they're definitely going to be positioning themselves really well going into the holidays.
Does the Wii even exist anymore?
I'll
take that as a no, Justin. Yeah.
Yeah. There just really is no more Wii U games slated for the end of this year that anybody is really caring about. Nintendo is putting a lot into their next big console that's going to be announced next year. That's going to be called the Nintendo NX. And it sounds like they're putting all their eggs in that basket and waiting to see what people think about it.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Apple and the iPhone unveiled yesterday. I mean, I don't think there really was any surprise. Maybe the greatest impact for people is going to be the headphone jack and the fact that if you get a new phone, you're going to have to get new headphones as well.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about that for a long time. We knew that iPhone was going to introduce a model that's taking out that traditional jack. And I don't really agree with their reasoning behind it, but it does present a really interesting way for them to put together hardware and control the way that the headphone jack works with that. I don't know whether that's going to be very popular, but I think not trying to reinvent the phone was maybe a smart move with this one, where you introduce something that's going to be important to consumers but is relatively small, which is a different way to interact with the audio on the device. And then maybe for the next round of iPhones, that's when they do something really big and different.
You know, I was convinced a couple of months ago that I needed Bluetooth headphones for my existing iPhone 5 or 6 or whatever it is. And so I went out and got a nice pair, and I just didn't like the sound of it. It didn't work the same for me. Is that going to be an issue for people as they convert to the Bluetooth headphones?
I think that is going to be a continuing problem, that as ugly as they are and as much as we don't like to use them, having a headphone jack that is directly connected into your phone is just more reliable. Bluetooth is really convenient, and it's super great to use, but it drains your battery faster, and the connection issues just really aren't cleared up yet. If iPhone 7 can solve that, if they can have a really strong, constant connection, that could be a game changer. If they're putting a lot of resources into it, that might make people change over to this wireless system, but right now, we don't really have a lot of faith in it.
That's Justin Haywald, the managing editor for GameSpot.com. Justin, thanks very much for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me on.
I'll let you get back to your PlayStation now. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 1222. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk to the guy behind the levitating cup a little bit later today, Joel Paglioni. But right now, Scott Schroeder is in the studio. He is the chief brand officer for Garrett Popcorn Shops. And no matter where Scott goes, it just smells better.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, kindly.
There are many things I want to talk to you about, but we're in here for a bit of a purpose, too, right? This is Hunger Action Day today.
Correct.
And you guys in Garrett Cares are involved in that. Explain that for me.
Correct. We just launched our first ever co-branded tin with a charity, and it's with Feeding America. Feeding America is another Chicago-based company, and through our Garrett Cares program, we like to reach out to the communities in which we serve. And Feeding America is actually in every county in America. They have a food bank or a food pantry relationship. And we have shops in 7 states. And because of our website presence at GarrettPopcorn.com, we deliver to every state in the country. And so when you purchase from Garrett, and when you purchase one of our beautiful co-branded 1 gallon or 1 quart tins, we're able to convert that into a significant donation to Feeding America.
So what, it's about 10% of the purchase?
Correct, 10%, and the consequences are really quite stunning. Every time I relay them to a friend or a family or a neighbor, it takes my breath away. So, for example, if you were to go into our 625 North Michigan Avenue shop, Steve, and buy a 1 gallon tin of Garrett Mix.
Yeah, I've never been there, Scott, really.
We can walk there after our interview.
Sure, again, okay.
And you purchase it in our beautiful Feeding America tin design, we will donate to Feeding America and allow them to secure and distribute 36 meals.
No kidding.
It's really compelling.
Wow. And it stays local. So no matter where you buy, it goes to the local Feeding America chapter.
So, that's for example, here in Chicago, it's the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
Well, that's great. And so, and how long will this go?
This will run. It's not only the first time we've co-branded a tin, but it's also our longest partnership through June of 2018.
Oh, wow. Great.
I do hope to sell out of all of our tins well before then and have to place a reorder.
And this is part of Garrett Cares, right?
Correct.
And I've pursued this a little bit because I have to say that sometimes when I hear companies and their charitable giving or their charitable arm, I think, well, that's really just a function of the business. You know, that's marketing for the business. And you must hear that too. So what do you say when people say that to you?
Oh, it's really easy. It's because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
These are our friends and our neighbors. I live in Southeast Ravenswood, and four blocks away from me is a church that every Tuesday night is a food pantry. It literally is. You know, food scarcity is in all of our backyards. We just don't know about it.
And a healthy company does things like that.
Correct.
And they do it for the right reasons.
Oh, happily so.
Now, as the chief brand officer for Garrett Popcorn, I joked earlier about the aroma wherever you go, but how hard can it be? You just open up a tin of popcorn, right?
I have the best job in America, Steve. I walk down Michigan Avenue with bags quite often, and I'm like a mother goose. I have little fans following me wherever I travel.
I was looking and reading up on the company, and I didn't realize until I got set to talk to you what an international footprint you have. I mean, Abu Dhabi, right? How many countries are you in?
Excellent question. I don't know the number of countries, but I can say we have 50 shops around the world.
Okay.
With the majority of shops here in Chicago, of course.
And so I'm thinking of that then. You know, it's shops around the world, and, you know, You've got reputation here. What makes someone in Abu Dhabi or Tokyo or wherever want to get American popcorn? And then I thought, well, maybe you're just catering to Americans overseas, but that's not the case.
No, it's much broader than that. And even with the differences in palate, folks love America. They love Midwestern.
And that's what they're buying. That's what they're buying.
Exactly. They're buying a taste of America.
Wow.
So we don't change our recipes. We launch with all of our small batch handcrafted recipes internationally. We fly in all of our kernels and our cheese and our sugar just so we can mimic the perfect Chicago experience
and,
regardless of where we are in the world.
And the customers who go in there are going in there because they want an American product.
Correct. And they want one that's delicious and craveable.
They want a really good American product.
Exactly.
Well, that's nice to hear because we tend to think of ourselves sometimes as being a little downtrodden around the world, but still very marketable. Well, anything else you want to tell me? Because it's been great talking to you, and I've been walking by you, and I see you walk up and down this with all the popcorn all the time.
I try to smile and wave. Well, because today is Hunger Action Day and September is Hunger Action Month, I would love for your listening audience to purchase a tin, our Feeding America design, fall in love with the design and the Garrett mix inside, and then come back at Thanksgiving when we're all gathered around our tables with bounty before us and acknowledge all the good in our lives, but then also do something to help others in need.
Scott Schroeder, the brand manager for GarrettPopcorn.com, chief brand officer. Thanks very much. It was nice to meet you.
You're very welcome.
Hope we can
Steve.
Do it again.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook, Steve Bertrand as well, or SteveBertrandTravel.com, all over the place. I think Elise Glink might tell me I need to be a little bit more focused. I don't know. Elise, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
You know, as I'm saying those different sites and Steve Bertrand on books, I realize I'm kind of scattershot and that's what we talk about every week. That's a bad idea, isn't it?
Well, it depends. You are you, and you're being the authentic you, and what you're doing is making yourself available on different platforms where people may want to connect with you, right? So Steve Bertrand Travel is part of the travel thing that you do, you know, in some of the other places you showcase some of your other pieces.
You know, the news was sponsored by LogicalPosition.com, and what they do is they help you form a story, a narrative on your website that helps drive traffic to your business, if you're a pizza joint or a landscaper or whatever. But once they get to your website, you've got to have the content there that's going to engage customers and keep them. And I think that's kind of what we want to talk about this week, right? The four laws of content marketing.
Exactly. I mean, in my content marketing company, ThinkLink Media, we talk to people all the time, and we get companies that say, oh, we want to do this, or we want to pivot to this direction. And I always say to them, that's great. Pivoting is great. Building your brand is great. Extending your brand, what a great idea. But you have to follow the four laws of content marketing, or what ends up happening is you spend a whole lot of money and you don't get much to show for it. So no ROI.
What's content? Let's just start with there in general. We're talking about things to look at and read online, right?
Yeah, it used to be information, right? I'll just call it information. I don't know. The word content, I guess, seemed larger and more generic to people, and so it encompasses things like infographics or blogs, or it might be advertising, or it might be the caption that you put under photos, and it might be the photo itself. So it now seems to encompass anything that would go onto a website or an ad anywhere in the world.
And the idea, though, is you've got to put something there that's not just filling space, but something that's going to actually be a value to your customer, or to the customer.
Exactly. So number one on my list of the four laws of content marketing is you've got to provide value to your audience. So that means knowing who your audience is, but providing something to them that's unique, that they can't get anywhere else. So most of what I see is it's just so repetitive. And I'll give you a great example. For a blog that I write for CBS News, we often will do a take on the most or least expensive or most or least something
right.
When it comes to houses. And every single week people see that story and then they say, oh, well, I have a brand new most least, you know, kind of places to live idea, and I'll have already seen it three times that week. So you've got to be unique in what you're doing and how you present it, and that's hard work. It's not that easy, but it's really important.
That's clickbait, isn't it? I mean, anytime I see a list, I tend to shy away from it.
You know, I think some people really like listicles because it's a fast way of getting information, but you have to make them unique and you have to make them valuable. So I really, you know, if I just want to rank the top 20 communities by their most expensive places to rent apartments, I think that's a pretty, you know, I see that all the time. But if you want to look at the top 20 houses that have been made out of used airplanes, which honestly is a thing, and I wrote about it 3 years ago, that's different.
It's funny, too, because, I mean, we're talking about online and clickbait, but that's how people used to sell magazines as well. People love lists. They put lists on the cover, and it moves copies. So I've got nice content. I've got my website. How do I figure out my strategy and get an idea of what I should do with it all?
Right. So strategy, I think, is really important, and it's important because you don't want to waste money, and I'm all about, you know, saving money. So
thank you very much.
Right. So you have to understand who you're targeting and what exactly you want from them. And let's take your Steve Bertrand travel as an example. The kind of trips that you run, they're not going to be for, say, millennials with huge student loans because they don't have the time and they don't have the money to go. And so you might, and you know because you've run a bunch of these trips, you know who your target audience is just by who's signing up for it or who's on the list, the waiting list. That's what you want to do is start with who the audience is, and then work in a reverse engineer way where say, okay, what would appeal to them? What would they like to know about? And sometimes what you have to do is you have to poll your audience or your customers to see what it is that's meaningful to them. And then you create a strategy around what's meaningful to the people you're trying to appeal to. And what will hopefully happen is you'll appeal to more of those kinds of people and they'll come through the door and you'll have ROI.
So that's interesting. So you're not talking about how to reach out. You're talking about how to keep or attract the people who've reached into you, right? Once they found your site, put content there that's going to attract your target audience. We're not talking about someone who's trying to bring your target audience in, rather engage them once they are in.
Yeah, well, you want to engage them once they're in, and you also want them to recommend you to other people that they know, their friends, neighbors, relatives, whoever, who can also come in and become part of a larger group. And so you're creating a community of people who are sort of similar to each other in a lot of ways. And then I'll hear from people who say, well, now I want to reach into a different group. That's fine. The easiest way to think about how to grow that audience is to think about the way that neighborhoods develop in a city. So when you're in a city, you get to a neighborhood like Andersonville. When Andersonville was Andersonville, when it was just starting out, what it really was the next block over from a different neighborhood, like Edgewater. So these neighborhoods will grow sort of block by block, and over 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, suddenly you have a community. If you think about what's going on in the West Loop, There used to be nothing from Greektown to the stadium.
Right, right.
And now I drove on Madison Avenue, and every single block has cool apartments and beautiful shops and great-looking restaurants and people strolling at all hours of the day or night. And honestly, you probably remember 30 years ago what that area looked
30
like.
30 years ago, 15 years ago. Now,
right.
Now I can't afford to live from here to there.
Right, but it's cool to drive through, and that's how a strategy works, right? You understand where you're going, and then sort of incremental change builds up over time. And that's where that goes into my third law, by the way. Be consistent, because content marketing is not a one-hit wonder, right? You can't count on lightning in a jar. What you want to do is be there reliably with information that your audience and your customers and their friends can count on so that they think about you and they go and visit when they need something.
And so
they know they can depend on it.
So it's almost like a sense of home, so that they know when they're there that they're going to be comfortable. They know what to expect in a way. I mean, not everything, but the same sort of tone or feel. And part of that then also leads to number four, right, of creating your own personality or conveying the personality of your business when it comes to the content online.
Yeah, I mean, there's a company in Chicago, right? They're in Evanston, but now they're kind of all over, called the Spice House. Have you had Spice House?
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
It's amazing, a Spice House, and I was given a gift from there, I don't know, 20 years ago, and I went and looked at their website. I knew the guys who were developing that website, and they've done something really smart. I mean, first they sold out selling spices, and then they started to put out recipes that had the spices in them. Right? So you could go and download recipes or read about it and see pictures of the actual meals and know that you could get those spices and those spice combinations right there on site. And they were early to that party. That sounds like a pretty normal thing. Or you think about, on the flip side, the New York Times has just introduced Meals in a Box. Their cooking channel is so successful that they've got online that now they take those recipes, they're getting shopping lists, and you can just order it, have it all delivered, and then cook that meal that night.
Beautiful. Elise Glink, the co-host of the Monday Morning Marketing Podcast. You can hear that at WGNplus.com. What else should we talk about today? Elise, how's the business going? Tell me about the
Best Money Moves.
Thank you. It slipped my mind. BestMoneyMoves.com.
Yeah, Best Money, it's going great. We have our first couple of customers that have gone on, and of course, there are all kinds of lessons that we're learning and little glitches in the system, which you learn, but it's very nice. We've got a local Chicago company with about 200 people that is being added today.
Nice.
And hopefully all of them will sign up and start to work with them. I'll be at their offices next week. It's a nonprofit in the western suburbs and working with them one-on-one.
Check it out, bestmoneymoves.com. Elise, nice to talk to you.
You too, Steve. See you next week.
Bye-bye. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's the Business Lunch, and here we are on 720 WGN. Joel Paglioni is on the phone line, and, well, Joel, I've just been talking about your little invention for weeks now, I think, so it's nice to finally get a chance to say hello. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so Joel had a Kickstarter campaign for this thing called the Levitating Cup, and it's gone very, very well, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, definitely.
And so you've reached your goal?
Yes. Yeah, we exceeded our goal. I think we raised $63,000 in a matter of 30 days, so we're very happy with that.
And shipments start when?
We expect to ship sometime in the middle of October, maybe early October, actually. I think we're ahead of schedule at this point.
But, you know, when people hear the levitating cup, they want to, I guess, get some sort of explanation for it. It has to do with magnets, right? But you actually have designed a cup that sits on a base or levitates over a base, what, 3 or 4 inches? Explain for me how it works.
Essentially, it's without going into a boring, nerdy scientific explanation, it uses electromagnetic suspension technology, which is fairly new. The same technology that they're using to levitate trains overseas and the speed trains. This basically uses magnets, and it creates an electromagnetic field that allows the cup, which sits on another magnet, to float effortlessly. Frictionlessly above the base.
And how late at night was it? How late at night was it that you came up with this idea?
You know, it's been you know, seriously, it's been probably about a year and a half that we've been working on this, and it took some time getting the product to where it's at today. It needed to be wireless. We had a wired version of it about a year ago, but it took some time to convert it to make it perfect for restaurant use and for home enthusiasts.
Well, that's
to be able to make it portable.
That's the thing, right? Because when I first read about it, I'm thinking, well, here's a little novelty item that, you know, Uncle George is going to have at home. But you are eyeing cocktail lounges as well, right? That you think that this might be something that catches on higher end sort of restaurants and bars.
Exactly. And what better cocktail lounge to inspire us than the local aviary by Grant Ackett and his team. So we're very inspired by the local gems like the Aviary, Alinea, Acadia, all the Michelin star restaurants. We have such an amazing restaurant, really market and talent here in Chicago. And we were inspired by that. I was personally inspired by that. And that's exactly what we're after. We're planning to create spectacles with the cup. There's just been, over the past decade, a lot of attention on the plate. We said, why not the cup? Let's make the cup shine and make it part of the spectacle.
Are you getting, aside from the Kickstarter campaigns, are you getting nibbles from restaurants and bars?
Yes, definitely. We've got a lot of interest from the Las Vegas casinos. We've got a lot of interest from Red Bull, who want to make their cups have wings, make their drinks have wings.
Nice,
and we've got other restaurants that are interested in doing the same. So it's hopefully going to elevate the beverage menus at their restaurants, no pun intended.
Okay, Joel, right. And I didn't say lift your spirits for that very reason, too. But okay, so I'm holding the base. I've got, my cocktail in the cup hovering above, what is it, about 2 inches, 3 inches?
It varies depending on how much alcohol you are. Yeah, exactly. But it's about an inch to 2.5 inches.
Oatmeal, would it lift oatmeal?
Definitely.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, so I'm carrying this cocktail around, and if I, run my finger between the cup and the base, does the cup fall down, or is there some sort of safeguard for that?
Definitely not. You can actually mount this under surfaces.
Really?
In fact, yeah. So there's, we're working on developing the device. Our first launch of our first product was through our Kickstarter. Once we get the production through, our plan is to go back to the drawing board and re-engineer it to make it even stronger, so it will go through even thicker surfaces. Right now, we can get it to go through a quarter inch to an eighth inch surface, so that means you can have a false top on your bar and mount these underneath.
That's beautiful. So I get it. So now you sit at a bar, and the bartender just puts the glass above the spot, and it floats. You don't see the base at all.
Exactly, and you can actually have it on a track where it could run down the bar. So you literally could create a haunted bar scene and really freak some people out. And it would be an interesting, fun idea for people.
Joel, you might be a genius.
I wouldn't go that far.
All right, we got to run. Tell people where they can find more information.
You can find the Levitating Cup at levitatingcup.com, and we're currently offering our Kickstarter pricing for a limited time before we kick off our production order at Indiegogo. You can search Indiegogo, or the link is directly on our levitatingcup.com website.
Excellent. Joel Paglione, great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.